In the mid-1950s, the UN devised a plan for this kind of mass resettlement, and it was met with a popular outrage in Gaza and kind
we
of
have
crushed
15
in
seconds.
A popular uprising. These kinds of plans are long-standing, and there's a real fear that they will be realized. But for now, we have to see Egypt is rejecting it, but Israel's creating a situation where life is becoming unlivable in Gaza.
Sherif Abdelkaddous, independent journalist working with the Egyptian news outlet Matamasser, produced the award-winning documentary The Killing of Shireen Abu Akleh about the Palestinian-American journalist. We will link to your piece in The Guardian. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right. 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Step up during our last week and help us reach our goal of $55,000 for the fall membership drive. Contribute at kboo.fm/give by October 28th. And your donation will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $14,000, thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Donate and become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give right now, or by texting KBOO to 44321.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture. Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KBOO every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian.
And eventually, they'll go insane.
You never know what you will find on your radio/interwebs during the show, but it will be something.
They'll go insane. Eventually,
that's the Vinyl Pajama Party, alternating Tuesdays at 3 a.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Yes, as the fella said, it's KBOO Portland. It's 8:02 a.m. KBOO does rely on your contributions of financial support. You can do that by texting the letters K, B, O, and then another O to the number as follows, 44321. Just like Sabrina, Arabella, Eric, Bob, and Thomas all did in the past 24 hours or so. We'd love to see your name on that list. Why not do it as the program's going? Speaking of which, it's time for Too Much Information with your hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. So stay tuned.
All right, good morning, good morning, and welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. We say it's too much information, but really it's just about right. Wouldn't you say, Tracy?
Well.
My name is Abe Proctor, and that very assertive voice you just heard was Tracy Simmons, my co-host. Welcome to our show. Thank you for tuning in. As engineer Sonia mentioned there in the interlude, this is KBOO's fall membership drive. You can help support this radio station by texting KBOO to 44321. You can also do it by visiting the website kboo.fm and clicking on the donate button. Thank you for your support. Tracy, we're going to start with a pop quiz. Are you ready?
I think so, maybe.
In the United States Constitution, Article 1 is dedicated to the legislative branch. There is exactly one officer specifically called out and enumerated in Article 1 of the Constitution. Do you know what that officer is?
Speaker of the House.
Yes. Give her a gold star. Speaker of the House. The only in the legislature specifically called out in the United States Constitution. I would infer by that, Tracy, it's probably a pretty important spot.
Well, I mean, it is. We're in an interesting space right now. But before we go there, I just want to think about checking back in on some stuff we talked about before. So
let's do that. Yes.
So, of course, the unfolding situation in the region known as Gaza is dire and continues to get worse. We want to, you know, keep our eyes on this. I don't want us to look away. There have been some demonstrations here in Portland to support a free Palestine, and I'm really proud of the Jewish community, Portland's community, for coming up to stand up against violence and the destruction that's happening. We're going to keep giving you updates on that situation. Also want to loop back on the story about theft in Portland as a reason some of these big box retailers are leaving the city. Fox 12, I'm not a big fan of Fox News, but Fox 12 did an expose, and what they found was that it's complete nonsense, as we asserted on the show just a couple weeks ago. They looked at police calls from the various stores, Target stores, that are slated to close, and what they found is that the police data does not align with the narrative that there was growing crime and stealing. And so what's interesting, a consumer of information, as a person who has a strong sense of, being able to sniff out some nonsense, I think Abe and I got it nail on the head. What was said to be happening is not necessarily happening. We still don't have, Target Corporation coming out and telling us the truth. But the truth is that they've been losing money for years. This last quarter, they lost a lot of money, and their investors are telling them to, cut bait. And, of course, they're also likely, they will not say this, but likely anticipating the impact of the Portland Green Fund initiatives that will require big box stores to pay more taxes for the energy that they consume and the emissions that they put off into the atmosphere. And so here we are. It's been proven. If you want to look at that story, check out Fox News. They did a really good job of, looking behind the story to find the real story. So there you have it.
How about that? How about that? Some actual investigative journalism from a local TV outlet. Who'd have thunk it? This is corroborated, if you're interested, by a similar expose in the Seattle Times, which corroborated the same sort of data and ascertained that the Target closures in Seattle were also for reasons not stated by the Target Corporation. So this, as you mentioned, Tracy, they've been losing money now steadily for a while. But it makes you wonder, though, why are they essentially blaming the communities they served on their way out of town? That's kind of a head-scratcher to me. Why would they do that? Is it to preserve their own infallibility in the eyes of people? I don't know.
I'll just say, if you say it's the poor people stealing or organized retail crime, right, you can create a boogeyman that gets you off the hook for leaving communities unfed, because unfortunately some of these Targets were also grocery stores to folks. You can walk away and say, you tried and the community didn't appreciate you. You can say the police didn't protect you as a corporation, right? They can say any number of things. And what I will say is that no one has ever gotten mad about people throwing poor people under the bus as the culprit, right? That's an easy mark. It's an easy target, because oftentimes the people that are named and implicated as the problem in the situation do not have the advocacy and have been demonized by the rest of the culture anyway. So I think it's an easy way to just say, you know, wash our hands of it. We're leaving too much theft. We've got this shrinkage problem, you know, the retail crime, organized retail crime, and create some buzz around something that doesn't exist so you can get yourself off the hook and wash your hands of it.
You said easy target. I see what you did there. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Tracy, you passed the pop quiz. Congratulations. Speaker of the House of Representatives is indeed the only enumerated legislative office or officer to be called out in the Constitution of the United States. We are now entering our third week without one. Why? Because the Republican Party, previously famous for all marching to the same tune, the same xenophobic, bigoted tune, is now so fragmented that it cannot get its act together enough even to elect a Speaker of the House from among its own ranks. What are we to make of this?
I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm just going to say, you know, right now the Democrats are really on my, you know, naughty list. I am so tired of them. I don't even want to talk about them. But what I'm just seeing is, you know, this idea that the media has portrayed for a long time, Democrats in disarray. I mean, I'm at the point where I'm like, when is the Times going to be up on the Republicans? They are a mess. It is and has been a complete and utter just buffoonery, right? I mean, like, we've seen this. This is not new, right? We went through a whole situation with the former guy who is the most criminally indicted person that we have seen in government, still trying to run for office to be our president. Like, give me a break. You know, we're seeing some of the worst of the worst. Jim Jordan, you know, wanting to run for speaker. Them turning on, you know, the McCarthy. Like, I just feel like there's this interesting situation happening in the Republican Party that no one wants to name, but it sounds like the end of the party is near, and I'm just praying on their downfall. But yet, you know, here we are. I don't know. We'll see.
The end of the Republican Party, as mouthwatering as that may sound, I think carries some pretty serious and scary consequences, and I'd like to dig into those maybe a little bit towards the end of the show. But I'd like to set up a little context for our listeners, because I think what we're seeing now represents a pretty significant break from the governing model, and I use that term very, very loosely, that has pertained to Republican control of the House of Representatives since Newt Gingrich took over as Speaker in the 1990s. So before I do that, I should tell people that 503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in this conversation. So Tracy, Newt took over the speakership when Bill Clinton was president, and this was the first time that the Republicans had controlled the House in a long, long time. So it was in many ways a coming out of the wilderness for them. Newt immediately set a pretty strident tone, giving free voice to some of the farther right voices that had been up to that point pretty muted within the Republican caucus. And there was a sort of a balance struck between the right wing of the party, you know, influencing the direction of the House as a whole, but the Speaker being a more mainstream centrist sort of figure, and then the whole party striking this larger alliance between the moneyed wing of the conservative electorate, the Wall Street Republicans, if you will, and the middle class and lower class conservative right base of the party. That was the alliance that guided the Republican Party for a long time. Essentially, it was the rich wing saying, hey, cut our taxes, you know, make us richer, and we'll make sure that we continue to hate the right sort of people for you. That was kind of how it went for a long, long time. Then Barack Obama was elected president, and Republican heads collectively exploded all at once across the United States. And the right, crazy right wing of the party took several steps closer to running the circus. So essentially you had a situation where now it was the right wing of the party calling the shots in the House, the so-called Freedom Caucus, and a leader that essentially had their strings pulled by this caucus. But this was still an acceptable centrist, more mainstream sort of Republican. I'm talking about people like John Boehner, people like Paul Ryan. These were the sorts of Republican speakers of the House that presided in this second phase of the leadership model, the governance model. And again, I use that term incredibly loosely. But now, in the era of Trump, when the right wing has taken full control of the party, and the bigoted base that was usually appeased by the Wall Street Republicans is now running the show, who has now elected as for about to elect or nominate for the third time the avatar of their deepest hatreds, Donald Trump. Now that they're running the show, this model is broken. And Kevin McCarthy, in this light, can be seen as the last of the nominally moderate centrist speakers of the House who kept this precarious balance in place. Once he was unable to deliver on the demands of the crazy Freedom Caucus agenda, despite the fact that that was legislatively impossible, he was tossed out of office by Matt Gaetz and his cronies on the far right. And here we are, the model that served the Republicans, and I'll leave it to our listeners to decide the value of that, is now broken, and they don't know what to do, Tracy. And we don't have a Speaker of the House.
And we don't have a Speaker of the House. And, I, you know, as much as I can't stand the Democrats, at least they're holding tight and saying, well, we're not going to vote for them either. So we're at a stalemate. Nobody to, you know, run the House of Representatives. Nothing happening. They're, you know, it's basically deadlocked. And these people who we have repeatedly elected, unfortunately, I'm talking about Republicans in this case, to not govern, who have brought forward no policy agenda other than blocking the policy agenda of, you know, the left, have brought forward nothing other than banning books and stopping people from being who they are and living their best lives as, you know, the people they want to be. You know, anti-trans agenda, anti-gay agenda, anti-everything agenda, culture wars, like all of this stuff, right? These are the same people that have been elected year after year, are now here, basically, you know, doing absolutely nothing. We just, you know, averted a government shutdown less than a month ago. And, you know, these are the same people. They're just taking up space. It's like, what is the solution here? And when do we get rid of these people? What do we do about the people? Because we're at the space where we don't have a national election. We can't make decisions about, say, the Constitution, or have a nationwide referendum on anything. We're relying on these people, and they are doing absolutely nothing for the American people.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And please don't let our amusement at the situation, and believe me, it is quite amusing, don't let that detract from the seriousness of the situation. Without a Speaker of the House, there is no business that can be done by the House of Representatives. If there is no business that can be done by the House, that means there is no legislation that can be passed by Congress at all. And if you've been paying any sort of attention, we are in the midst of several overlapping existential crises that urgently need smart solutions, much of which must flow from the legislative apparatus of our government, so which, you know, it's now completely at a standstill. But it was really funny. Some of this has been really, really funny. For example, when McCarthy was ousted by Matt Gaetz and his cronies for the sin of not letting the government shut down, there was this outcry. Even McCarthy himself took part in it, going to Democrats and saying, why didn't you rescue me? Why didn't you vote to keep me in the speakership? This is your fault. And we're like, well, okay. Well, because you reneged on your deal to keep the government open, or to arrive at a spending deal. You allowed the impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden, which is going to inexorably lead to his impeachment before the full House. There's really no doubt about that happening. And you've broken any number of other agreements you've made along the line. You are a liar, and you're unable to keep your word, and you're unable to keep the crazy part of your caucus in line. So why in the world should the Democrats have given him any cover at all? So essentially, watching the Republicans shoot themselves in a giant circular firing squad has been pretty amusing, but for the necessity of getting the business of the nation done. So 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Santiago, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you know, I'm finding the inability of the GOP to be able to find a replacement kind of kind of hilarious. Like, they don't, they have proven time and time again that they, you know, that they, I mean, they're just, I mean, they're the racist white man's party. But I think, you know, with the, Trump losing the election, I think what it's really produced is a reactionary right-wing movement within the party. And you know, Steve Bannon talked about it in running up to Trump being elected initially, because he talked about how his main plan was to essentially get to rip the guts out of the system, to grind everything to a halt. And I really see that as being kind of the plan, but they can't really say that out loud, because without a Speaker of the House, essentially nothing will get done, which is kind of the plan. They want, you know, they want to see the immediate immiseration of the people, including their own constituents, if they have to. And they're really not interested in making anything work. But it also kind of falls on the Democrats too, because they enabled this reactionary right wing kind of movement, because it was easier for them to fight against than having legitimate challenges to their power. You know, before AOC kind of started acquiescing to the before she started acquiescing to Nancy Pelosi, she was a real threat to a lot of the firmly established powers. You know, Bernie Sanders, before he gave in to Hillary Clinton's deception, you know, during the 2016 election, was a clear legitimate challenge to power. And I mean, we even saw that Hillary Clinton chose Trump because she figured he was so cartoonish and so buffoonish, there was no way she could lose, which would have been a far smarter, in the DNC's summation, would have been a far safer bet traditionally than going up against somebody who had legitimate solutions to things that they refused to take care of, because they're on the same payroll as the Republicans. But this has all backfired. So, I mean, honestly, like, I mean, you know, the chickens of capitalist hegemony are coming home to roost, and because the working class has little to no concept class warfare vocabulary, that they can't really put the thumb on what's really going on, because that's what this is. That's why the GOP is able to get away with this, and why the DNC, why the Democrats are letting them. You know, I mean, I just, it's, I don't really think it's a mystery if you really break it down like that. It's obviously a bit more nuanced, but I just, you know, I don't really see them trying to, I see them not making an effort on purpose. And I mean, it's, yeah, you know, and plus, if you think about it too, because of Trump's indictments, I mean, the GOP's platform for the last, you know, 8 years, for with Trump, for without Trump, has been essentially see Trump, if you want to know what the deal is. And Trump can't make up his mind on top of you know, being indicted on all these charges. So, I mean, they really screwed themselves. So it's
they have, and I think we'll leave it there. Thank you, appreciate the call, Santiago. What are your thoughts, Tracy?
I agree, and I just feel like there's never been a policy agenda that could, you know, be moved forward, because the policy agenda is all about, you know, controlling people and moving forward a white supremacist agenda, which most people have not supported. Right? They haven't even been able to do the things
like take away people's bodily autonomy. They did that through the Supreme Court. So they weren't even successful on any level with pushing, you know, their very far right agenda. It looks like nihilism. It looks like let's do nothing. Let's frustrate the people so much that they just give up on this process altogether. And then we still continue to have power because if people don't vote, we continue to get voted in by the dum-dums who support us. And those are the people who support a racist white supremacist agenda. So I just really feel like, you know, the system as it is designed absolutely does not work. We've said that a million times on this program. And yet, here and still, the American people, because we don't have a national referendum on how to make things work, will continue to not work and to disenfranchise more people and make more people frustrated, angry, and trying to figure out their own solutions. So it's like, here we are. Here we are. I do not disagree with Santiago.
No, I don't disagree with him either. And I think it's tempting in all of this to come to the conclusion that the yahoos who are calling the shots now in the Republican Party, you know, are just crazy prisoners of their own ids, right? That they are just rampaging and legislating in the names of their deepest fears and hatreds. that's true in a sort of reflected funhouse sort of way, but really they're acting in accordance with a very clear set of incentives. They govern this way and they articulate these ideas because it's what their constituents reward them for. Matt Gaetz is a raving homophobe and xenophobe because his constituents elected him for being one. And his behavior now in bringing down a Speaker of the House is acting entirely in accordance with the set of incentives that led to his position in the first place. So in a very strange way, the craziest people in the U.S. Congress are acting quite rationally and in accordance with their own self-interest. It's really quite an absurd state of affairs, Tracy.
I think at some point we've got to look at the constituents and say, like, what is it that you really want out of these people?
Yes.
That you continue to keep voting into office, who continue to not do your will or the will of any people? Like, I don't get it. But once again, we talk about all the time, the racism that allows folks, the bigotry, the homophobia, all of that, the transphobia that allows for people to salute and look to these people as leaders is not a logical response, right? It's not at all grounded or rooted in logic. It's rooted in fear. Fear of other people, fear of loss of power, fear of you know, people who are different, right? And that fear and logic are mutually exclusive as human capabilities, right? They can't function at the same time. If you are in a fear state, you cannot be logical about your choices, about who you think should lead, about what you think a leader should even do. And so how do we change that for those people who continue to support these yahoos? I don't know. I don't know if there's any changing them. But what I do know is that the proportion of people who support that nonsense doesn't seem to be changing. And they have been effective at, you know, banning books and stopping people from being educated, which I think will have a long-term impact on keeping those people around. And they know it. That's why they're doing it.
Right, and this leads back to the question you asked earlier. What do we do about these people? What do we do about these people who keep electing the Matt Gaetzes and the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Jim Jordans of the world? What is the problem? And we've talked about this on this program many times. We're talking about a group of Americans who would rather, apparently, burn the whole place down rather than suffer an America that starts to look unfamiliar to them, rather than to suffer America who allows people who don't look like them or think like them or follow the gender norms that have been indoctrinated into them, rather than let any of those people hold power, they are willing to burn the whole thing down. And this is something that I struggle and I struggle and I struggle, Tracy, to get my head around. But I just can't do it. You hear them talk about being oppressed, right? It's the right, it's white, mainstream white Christian Americans who have been yelling the loudest about being oppressed in recent years.
Are they really, though? Are they really? Other than the fact that they've been voting against their own economic self-interest for generations, in accordance with the devil's bargain that they made with the Wall Street Republican wing of the GOP. Yeah. And now that they've taken over, they don't seem to know what to do other than go on a rampage against all the people and all the ideas that they hate. And right now, the entire apparatus of our government is being held prisoner by them, and we're on the verge of a third presidential election of flirting with a full-blown fascist leading our country.
Yeah.
It's the most maddening situation.
A full-blown fascist who has fascist cronies who can't even decide who is going to be the Speaker of the House for the government to run and function effectively. Like make it make sense. Like, and once again, right, when we are talking about this particular party, they're very, very much in solidarity when they feel threatened by the radical left and leftist agenda around people's bodily autonomy, you know, the right for black people to be alive, the right for trans people to live and go to the bathroom mm-hmm. in public and go to schools and enjoy their lives. You know, they get very, very much, you know, banded together when it is focused on something that is against progress in this country. But right now, when it's about, like, who can lead, who can actually do the work of the government, you know, it's Republicans in disarray, boy, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm still amused by it, because for the longest time that, you know, if there was anybody in disarray, it was the other major party in our two-party system. So this is, it's amusing insofar as it goes. But I want to be very clear about my use of the term fascist when describing Donald Trump and when describing his supporters. I know that that term has lost a lot of its rhetorical utility because it's flung about and used as a pejorative against anyone or any set of ideas with which someone disagrees. But I'm using it in the fullest sense of the word here. Lest we forget, this is the man who just a few weeks ago said that shoplifters should be shot. This is a man who more recently said that immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country. This is a man who over the weekend said that perhaps only Jesus Christ could be elected Speaker of the House at this moment. he's a fascist, Tracy. His supporters are, if not fascist, at least fascist adjacent. And the lunatics are really running the asylum at this point. And as you mentioned, we are facing now the prospect of another government shutdown in just a few weeks, and we cannot even get the smallest piece of business through the People's House in Washington, D.C. How do we get our way? How do we find our way out of this conundrum?
I just don't know, because I feel like the people who continue to vote these folks in office either don't know or don't care. I don't even see these same folks demanding anything from their congresspeople. Right, like they will complain and literally get out the vote to stop Joe Biden, right, from, like, you know, taking over. Of course, like, really, like, is that really what you're about? Support, you know, January 6th, and, you know, like, take back our government from who? What are you talking about, right? Like, these people are insufferable, and oftentimes they are older voters who have those very deeply ingrained bigoted ideologies. They don't seem to be going anywhere as a voting block. So what is the narrative change around really directly messaging to those people who continue to put these people in office that they don't support anything that you might support other than hating the same people you don't like?
But that seems to be enough for him, right?
It really,
that was the secret of Trump's success, is that he hates all the right people and is unabashed about saying so. That seems to be enough. And they seem to be willing to burn the whole place down. It's astonishing to me. It's astonishing to me that the American experiment, as flawed as it has been, as rocky as its road has been, is going to fail because of a bunch of conservative people who wanted to take their football and go home and didn't want to play with the other kids. It's just the stupidest thing I can imagine. Incredibly frustrating to me. Now, I'm sure many of you listening are thinking the American experiment failed a long time ago. Well, there's a very strong argument to be made for that. But I would counter that argument by saying with every generation, the circle of equals has grown. More and more people have participated in the franchise with every generation. We have an incredibly long way to go along that road. But I'm telling you right now that if these people gain again and consolidate their power, we can kiss goodbye any chance of making the kind of social and economic progress that we want to see in this country. And we can kiss goodbye any chance of effectively confronting the multiple overlapping existential threats that confront us as a society. Not just us, but every society, every human being in the world at this moment in time. But here we are, arguing with people like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's enough to make me want to emigrate to the moon. Great.
Yeah, it's pretty, pretty dire straits out here. And, you know, and people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? And I think about the folks that would support a Marjorie Taylor Greene or, you know, Lauren Boebert, who I believe is no longer in Congress, hopefully. you know, the people that support those people are the kind of the worst of the Republican right, and will show up just to, you know, make the libs mad, right? And kind of their whole focus is about not governing, but, you know, showing the people, right? So it's just an interesting concept, and also a reason, you know, we should, as a society, be creating a more educated society and moving past the anti-intellectualism so we could focus on what would make a better society for more people. But interestingly enough, the whole design of the system is created to not do that. I mean, we're just at square one all the time. I feel like we're always being brought back to square one. And because we don't have a third party building at the local level, because, you know, it just seems like every 4 years, the Green Party or the Libertarian Party or some party comes up with a third party candidate out of nowhere for national presidential elections, which are not national elections, they're actually local elections, but for a national appointed president, right? They come out of the woodworks, but they're not doing anything on the ground. What does it look like also, you know, in this conversation about getting rid of Republicans, to build up a new party from the local level?
I would support it. I would absolutely support it. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's go to Squirrel. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, good morning. No, I'm not trying to be a pest 2 weeks in a row, but you got,
hey,
got me going. So if the poor people voted, they would tend to vote more Democratic as far as I can see. And there's a reason why the Republicans want to limit voting or make it harder to vote, and that's because more Democrat, they'd get more Democrat votes. Now in Australia, I believe they have a system where everybody in the country has to vote. It's mandatory that everybody participates in voting. And I think if that happened here, it might be undemocratic, but obviously, the Republicans would be very against this, because if everybody voted, I think the Democrats would have a landslide. There's a couple of other things in Australia that I think are pretty cool, and not everything is cool over there, but they also got rid of guns 25 years ago after a huge mass shooting, and guess what? Has not happened ever since, another mass shooting. One of the other things in Australia, I believe they have a 3 to 4 month election cycle, not this never-ending cycle that is perpetuated here by, again, money, which, like I talked about last week, which is what makes the military-industrial complex so popular, because we, as long as there's a war going on, They're making money, and our economy is doing fine. But in a 3 to 4 month election cycle, it's boom. You get so much money, the candidates get so much money, and that's it. And in 3 months, it's not a never-ending perpetual cycle. That's my two cents for today.
Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Can't argue with a whole lot about that, Tracy. There's other countries that have representative democracies that have managed to, you know, set up their electoral system such that we don't have to deal with the constant unending cycle of electoral posturing that we do here in the United States. Unfortunately, I don't see that changing here anytime soon.
Well, our system was made to not be changeable. I mean, it literally is an intractable system that we don't even have the ability to change it. We rely on the people we elect to change it, and if they are fully uncommitted to doing anything, it will never change. And here we are, right? Like, it really is the most frustrating analysis, right, of a system that was designed for the purpose of maintaining the status quo. And for me and the work that I do, the status quo is akin to a white supremacist agenda, right? And so for me, changing and attacking and challenging the status quo is required for the liberation of all marginalized, minoritized, and racialized people.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And following on Squirrel's comments about the Australian electoral system, yes, there's much to be admired there. But we should also point out that Australians also, in a ballot referendum, just resoundingly rejected a proposal to recognize the Aboriginal peoples of Australia in their constitution and to create a body to advise Parliament on Indigenous issues. So better electoral system there, but not a panacea against bigoted members of the electorate, clearly. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Ed. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
So I heard her say that, you know, she's upset with the Democrats and that Republicans keep electing the same electors, but the reality is that Democrats keep electing the same electors. Huh?
I said her name's Tracy. Go ahead.
Tracy. Okay. But it's really only we, the people, that can change it. You say we can't change it, but it's only us that can change it. We just have to be angry enough to walk out of our jobs and stop it. And it hasn't come to that point until it does, which the Republicans might be pushing us closer and closer to it, but sort of the Democrats. And you said something about not having a third party. Well, it is definitely an issue of two parties, and we keep choosing between two parties. It was the Democrats that tapped the shoulder of Biden because they couldn't stand the thought that Bernie Sanders might actually become the president or their nominee, because they can't let go of their power. It's both sides. It's not one side.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and we hear this argument a lot. But I think by any objective analysis, there's one side of this equation that the flaws run far deeper and are far more profound and dabble in much darker aspects of the human psyche than the other side does.
I think that illusion is what keeps it going this way. Because we are fighting in there, and so many people say, oh my God, thank God, I don't have to think about this anymore. And here we are.
One side is trying to take away rights from people. The other side is trying to preserve them or expand them. That's one way to measure this difference. What do you think, Tracy?
So our system is designed for two parties. Once again, right, we are literally locked in a status quo. We have not done the work. No third party has done the work at the local level to build up the party for party recognition, for party platform understanding. There's nothing that ever happens at the local level to attack the third, to attack the two-party system. Yet, you know, like I said, every, you know, 4 years, there's some third-party candidate that really is there just to pick off votes from either party and create a system where, you know, one of those two parties end up winning. So it's never been a winning strategy. It's not a good strategy. It hasn't worked. And, you know, what
I continue to say is the local level is where you have the most, you know, control over your own environment. And we also haven't built up, you know, voter support of getting involved in local elections. So as long as that's the case and people only come out every 4 years and that third party only comes out every 4 years, we're not really going to see a big change or shift away from this, you know, very, very dysfunctional system we currently have. And I've said it a million times as well, that if we want to see Democrats, you know, succeed and move forward a progressive agenda, progressives will have to take over the Democratic Party, run as Democrats over and over again, get a large enough caucus within the Democratic Party that is progressive, and move the party further to the left. This is a strategy, but it doesn't seem to work out because, once again, there's money in elections, and as long as we have money in elections, it will be the rich people who are beholden to their funders to do their bidding. And so, and of course, right, there's all kinds of money. We've been talking about how there are war profiteers both in the Republican and Democratic Party. As long as there is a money imperative in moving the country forward, the country will not move forward because the money will get in the way.
Back to you, Ed.
And that, and again, is where the people have to be angry enough to walk out of their jobs and be like, no, we're done.
Yeah. I think you're on
the only thing that's going to change it.
Yeah.
Because it's we, the people, not them, the government, and the elected officials.
Agreed. Agreed. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay.
Tracy, I think that there's really something there. I think a general strike of wide enough scope and long enough duration could be the lever that we need to perhaps extract the country out from under the influence of moneyed influence interests. What do you think?
The moneyed interests, unfortunately, are not going to relinquish, you know, control without a fight. And, you know, even when I hear our callers say, you know, we have to get angry enough, I don't know if we can even get angry enough. I mean, there were literal people, you know, in the streets, you know, or at the Capitol, you know, demonstrating for a free Palestine, and they were getting arrested in droves. And Joe Biden stood by while they were getting arrested for saying, we don't want genocide of the Palestinian people. Like, make it make sense. I mean, we're all here for 2020 when people, you know, were standing up for Black lives. And, you know, in this city, I was very proud because, you know, we were protesting for months in Portland. And of course, what we became known as is this, you know, hellhole of a city and unlivable and, you know, a liberal nightmare and a leftist.
Oh, yeah. The targets are closing down. Haven't you heard?
I'm saying, look, let's weave this all together. So the idea that the American people would build some kind of solidarity across workers of all types to have some kind of national strike, therefore to you know, change the hearts and mind of our elected officials to do the right thing is, I don't know. I wouldn't even say I'm cautiously optimistic that could happen.
We haven't tried a general strike, though, in the modern era. I mean, we talk about isolated protests in scattered cities, but imagine if a significant chunk of us just didn't show up for a while and shut everything down. That might be enough. That might be a way to peaceably move the needle in the direction of meaningful change. It's an idea that's appealed to me for a long time. I think maybe we should investigate that this idea at further length in a future show. Anyway, 503-231-8187. Corey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'll be brief, and you already kind of touched on it. You know, the Kmarts are shutting down. I was at the airport, and I'm sitting there, and there's a woman sitting next to me, and I was coming from Houston, and I was going to Portland. This is last weekend. And she's talking about how she feels safer in Houston because there's less violent crime. And, of course, the professor and me my antenna set up, like, that's not true. And so I had to, like, chime in, because I'm going to chime in when I hear something like that at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I asked her, well, what part of Portland do you live in that so makes you feel so unsafe? Because she was talking about how Portland is such an unsafe city. And she said she lived in Eastmoreland, and I used to live in Eastmoreland, and I always felt safe. So I was kind of confused by our conversation. Bottom line is that nothing she said was logical or statistically relevant. And when I told her there's more violent crime in Houston, than Portland by far, just if you look at the numbers of people. And I realized at a certain point, it doesn't matter how much logic or statistics I had, she just felt safer there. And so I asked her, well, why don't you move to Houston? And she literally said, well, Houston's just a bit too diverse. So Houston's too diverse, but you feel safer there, but you're going back to Eastmoreland, but you don't like unhoused people. It was just like the most confusing conversation, but it's the psychology. And then I looked at her purse and she had a Trump pin. I'm like, okay, that's totally fine. But it goes to like your point, like the logic doesn't matter with some of these individuals. It's the side that makes them feel good. And there's something about Trump that makes people, you know, I want to live, and I'm not knocking Eastmoreland. Once again, I live there, but I can live in this bubble and basically hate on other people. And this is too diverse, and the unhoused people are going to get me, et cetera, et cetera. But once again, logic didn't even make any sense there. And it went to my cousin. Here, my cousin, we were visiting. He's a young black man, 21. My sister and I are trying to have a conversation with him because he's just like, yeah, I'm a Trump supporter. And we're like, okay, well, you have two educated people here trying to tell you, or at least ask you why. And once again, it was basically nothing but homophobia and hatred towards, you know, towards other brown people. And we're just like looking at each other like, dude, you're brown. And it was just like the most, so we're dealing with so many people. And then at a certain point, I just throw my hands up in the air. It's hard dealing with individuals who don't have any logic, or when logic and education don't matter whatsoever. And that's what's been weaponized in this country, where you have people who are, and I'm not trying to be mean, but who are fairly ignorant, but these people are going to vote. And they're fairly ignorant, and it doesn't matter. They're just going to choose to be ignorant. I'm ignorant. I don't care about X, Y, Z. You hate the same people I hate. I'm on your side. And you see it at different levels and different spectrums. And I just find it to be interesting, but also really scary that that's where America is right now, to where I'm going to choose the side of ignorance because it makes me feel good. And I'll kind of leave it at that.
Hey, thanks very much for the call. Yeah. The frustration of being your head against a wall, impervious to all reason. Yeah, I know that feeling. What are your thoughts, Tracy?
I mean, I agree. And I said it, right? There's no logic in it. It's like,
no.
You hate the same people I hate. I'm going to support you. I find you entertaining. I feel like, you know, the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Trump, right? There's an entertainment factor to them as well that plays into the,
yeah.
You know, you're kind of funny, right? You hate the same people I hate, and you're kind of funny the way that you could say it out loud. I can't really do that, but you can. So I'm going to look up to you as the person who's the voice of what I really be thinking. But I know I can't say, because in my community that might not fly, in my job that might not fly, you know what I'm saying? And so it's this interesting, like, okay, you are equally bigoted. I love that about you. You have no policy agenda that's going to actually support me or, you know, my existence in this country, because it's oftentimes some of the poorest people who are the most bereft of information and any kind of intelligence to make a decision about who they vote for, but still are enacting their right as an American citizen to vote, and are doing it in a way that advances the cause that they think is most supportive of their goals. But once again, right, it's not rooted in anything logical.
Yeah, you're right. I think amongst the right wing in this country, there is a fairly strong humor element associated with the current brand of politics that they practice. And that involves, you know, owning the libs, right? As the saying goes, they all have a good chuckle every time left-wing heads explode at their latest pronouncement. But there's such a dark side to that, Tracy. Like we all heard in recent weeks about the death threats that were being phoned into those members of Congress who voted against Jim Jordan's speakership. I mean... There is most definitely a dark, dark piece to all of this. And those that portion of the electorate, that's what's guiding them right now. You know, and it's a frightening thing. And that's one of the biggest reasons that I speak out against allowing these people to assume power again. And by assuming power again, I mean the presidency of the United States. Because if you read about what they're planning, the overhaul of the federal government that Trump has talked about openly, it will take place if he is elected. We will have turned a corner that there's no coming back from. And all the darkest impulses that are animating these people now will drag this country down to a place where we can't get back. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Reba. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I had two things that I ran into that I really wanted to get your opinions on. One of it was Kill All Normies by Angela Nagel. And in it, she was writing about kind of the different strategies that were used in the 60s by kind of, I think it's called being like transgressive. So, you know, wearing Nazi things when Nazism was like not popular anywhere, just to piss people off. And kind of the more counterculture movement there and how that really exists nowadays as the main strategy of the right through the humor popularized by 4chan. And then another thing was, this is something that Michael Hobbs said that kind of has been helping me make sense of the world, is that there's no real conservative ideology like throughout history. It's always just been about power. And I also wanted to say, from I think two callers back, they were talking about how they have a family member who's 21 and now supports Trump. And that really does feel like the pipeline for growing up. Like, I'm 26 and socialized male, and without intervention, it seems really easy for people to end up in a alt-right type of situation, just looking for a healthy ego. Thank you.
Thank you. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Tracy, your thoughts?
Well, I just feel like we're at this point, right? There's this opportunity to like name the things, and I really do appreciate that the caller named like this like, you know, kind of affinity towards Nazism, right? It's part of the fascist movement, and it's like that in your face, like, hey, you know. And I feel the same about, you know, when people were up in arms about, you know, people being offended by the you know, rebel flag and using that's our history, right? This kind of in your face anti everything that is bringing people together and inclusive and moving towards equity, right? Everything that's just like, ugh, we don't like that. And, you know, I think that has worked, right? It gets the attention of folks, right? A la Proud Boys and Patriot Front, some of these groups that are very much in your face with their disdain for, you know, liberating our society and moving towards greater equity and greater, you know, self-determination for all people, right? Because, as the caller said, it is a threat to power. If you can maintain power by fear and putting people and keeping people in their place at an economic level, at a, you know, ability to be self-determined level, you have the upper hand. And I think it to some degree has worked. It's definitely got those people who are, you know, somewhat oppositional, defiant, and wanting to be out and in your face and affront to what looks like the determination of marginalized people to shut that conversation down. And of course, you know, in places like Portland, we've been named as an Antifa city. Well, Antifa is anti-fascist. We should all be Antifa. That's
we should.
Case, right? But here we are, right, where we change the meaning of words. And oftentimes it's because those same people get out and say, oh, well, it's critical race theory, or, oh, we're talking about this, and change the meaning of words. It's been somewhat strategic, although, you know, not good, but it to some degree has worked. So how do we shut that down?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? Reba said something about this practice of, you know, offending normies amongst members of subcultures and countercultures by displaying imagery and modes of dress or whatever that tweak the noses of the members of the mainstream crowd. I think that applies to the modern right wing only from the outside, because I think within that culture, they believe that they are the mainstream, that they are holding on to something that is slipping away, and they represent true Americanism and true American culture and the Christian nation that we were always meant to be. So... what happens when you are a counterculture who thinks you are the mainstream? I really don't know. I think we're seeing that play out right now. But we are out of time. Tracy, send us home.
Well, it is, you know, getting down to the dark days of you know, fall. It's about to be real dark in the morning, real dark in the evening. Of course, what I want you to do is take care of yourselves and each other. It's also getting colder, and I know at least 5 people right now with COVID. So if you are in a space with lots of people, I need you to mask up. Please stay home if you're sick. If you're traveling, also use a mask. Wash your hands. And we're going to beat this cold season. If you need a vaccination, a flu shot, please check in with your local pharmacies. Some of them are still doing it for free. Some are charging. But please take care of yourselves and each other and our community health.
Getting my COVID shot today. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This has been Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. We'll be back at you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of the Día de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street in Portland. Día de los Muertos is an ancient celebration originating from the indigenous people of Mexico. Festivities will include altar creation, muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, and live musical performances. Again, that's the Día de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street, A31 Southeast Salmon Street in Portland.